Okay, we were talking 2 weeks ago a little bit about the Hisnagdus. We began to talk about the opposition amongst the tzaddikim of Poland, Galicia, the opposition to the Chassidus of Pszczyszko, which was a continuation on a more intense level of the opposition that was to the Yidakozers, to the Holy Jew of Pszczyszko, which we spoke about, and a number of reasons why there was this Hisnagdus, this opposition to Pszczyszko, to the Rebbe Bunim, and much of it was connected to the Rebbe Bunim's background. We're going to talk more about that. Much of it was connected to his background, which we discussed at length, the fact that he was not really Polish, and that he was of German origin by the family, that he was not only was he from a non-Hasidic background, but even as far as a career was concerned, he wasn't by any means in the conventional Rebbe, as we spoke about at length. He was a businessman, he was a pharmacist, he spoke many languages, he was not dressing in the typical fashion of the Jews of Poland. And there were a number of reasons, together with kinna and other things, that all contributed to the machlokas. Following the death, we spoke last time, but following the death of the seer of Lublin, of the chayzer from Lublin, the Rebbe Rabunim began actually to open up shtiblach in different places and to attract many students. This, of course, was not going to make the opposition any less. It made it more intense. Also keeping in mind that at this time, the great tzaddikim, the great leaders of the Hasidic movement of Poland were no longer alive. I mean, the Kozhen Samagid, Rabbi Mendel Rimanover, and as I just mentioned, the Chayzer from Lublin had already passed away. So the fact that there was this opposition, there was really nobody of the stature to stop it. There was with one exception, and that's the Apter Rav, the Ohev Yisrael. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Also, something else that we would go into in greater length if we had time, but I'm just going to mention briefly, is another thing that caused the opposition to Pszczyszko, and this would later on continue with Kotsk, there were different Hasidic groups that are famous for different mottos. For instance, Rabbi Nachum Breslover was famous not to be Misyayish. Tonight, by the way, is Yutes Kislev. Yutes Kislev is certainly a yontif for the Hasidim, certainly among Chabad Hasidim, which was the gula, the redemption, the freeing from prison of the Balatanya, but not only for Chabad, since it's the yahrzeit of the Mizrachi Magid, who was one of the, which I think Mizrachi Magid is the next tzaddik we're going to be talking about, the Mitzvah, I think, after the Rebbe Bunim. But the Bechlal, the different branches of Chassidus, each one had something unique to offer in terms of waking up the Jewish people, these difficult times before Mashiach would come. Each aspect, each school of Chassidus had something else to contribute as far as waking up Klal Yisrael and attaching and being and more attached to the Neshama of the Torah. So in Breslov it was not to be Misyayish, not to give up hope. The motto of Pszczyszko was Nish Noch Gemacht, which means that there is no imitation. In Pszczyszko and Kotsk, that which was most hated, was most despised, was copying, was imitating. And that doesn't mean, of course, that a Jew shouldn't be observant of halacha. Of course, everybody has to observe halacha. But the feeling that davka, because somebody's father had a certain minhag, had a certain custom, or somebody's rebbe had a certain custom, that doesn't do anything for you, and another custom would do something for you, and so on. There was more independence in Pszczyszko, not davka to follow in the minhagim of earlier rabbis, of earlier tzaddikim. This, in Galicia and in Poland, was a no-no. This didn't go over well by the other tzaddikim in Poland and Galicia, where a minhag, the hanhaga, the custom of the father, of the grandfather, was considered to be the holiest of holies. And the job of the rebbeim was handed over from son to grandson to great-grandson, and the main responsibility was to maintain the court and to maintain the customs of the court. In Peshitzcha, there was no such thing. That wasn't really important. and that motto of Nish Nochgemacht, not to imitate, not to copy, which I've mentioned many times, that one of the tzaddikim, I mentioned it, I think, here just a few weeks ago, that one of the tzaddikim was that conducted his court in a way that was entirely different from his father's, and the chassidim were very disturbed by that, and they sent a representative. They sent one of the older chassidim to ask him, "How is it possible that he's not following in the ways of his illustrious father, of the old rabbi?" And he says, "I am exactly like my father. My father never imitated anybody, and I also don't imitate anyone. I'm the same as my father. I'm completely independent." This was the motto of Peshitzcha: independence and originality, and therefore the slightest thing was suspect of being ingenuine, of being non-authentic. And we have many interesting stories that we spoke about way back when we were talking about Reb Leib Leger last year, how even when he first came to that world of Peshitzcha and Kotzk, the kind of tests that he had to go through, and other young chassidim who, when they arrived in Peshitzcha, they were tested in different ways. There was sort of an initiation rite to find out whether these were people who were independent thinkers and people who were prepared to take original steps in Avodas Hashem. So this was another reason why there was such strong opposition to Peshitzcha, its originality. And for that matter, that's something which is, anybody that's going to do something that's different is suspect. And in the case of Peshitzcha, we'll see that things got so carried away among many of the opponents that they were suspected of, God forbid, doing major avarice in the Torah. Now, I mentioned last time that the tzaddik who was leading the school of opposition was Rabbi Meir Halevi from Apt. And I mentioned not to be confused with the famous Ohev Yisrael, the Apt Rav. Rabbi Meir Halevi from Apt was the author of the Sefer Or LaShamayim. Unfortunately, many Hasidim from Galicia and Poland were bringing Lashon Hara, were saying things against the Rebbe Rabbun of Peshitzcha, and the rumor that was going around was that in Peshitzcha, that the Rebbe Rabbun is lenient, and so are the Hasidim with a number of halachas. For instance, that they were not careful with all the fast days, that they only fasted on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. And there was a rumor going around that the Rebbe Rabbunim and the Chassidim did not fast on the other fast days, Tanis Esther, Nisar B'Tavis, and so on. This, of course, was not true. Another rumor that was circulating, and all of this reached the ears of Rabbi Meir Halevi, who, although he was an extraordinarily great and holy person, and we're going to talk a lot about him tonight, although he was very great, it seems that in this respect, he trusted very much the reports of the Chassidim, and he was very, I don't want to use, God forbid, the word naive, but in that way he was simple, that he believed what Jews were telling him. And obviously, once he heard reports that there were things going on, for instance, he heard also that they don't wait 6 hours in Peshitzcha between meat and milk. And people were saying, because everybody was from Germany, and in Germany they're not careful 6 hours and so on, and this is what's going on, that the Chassidim are not waiting 6 hours between meat and milk. These were a number of the things that were being brought to the Rebbe of Meir Halevi. And as a result of that, the redifus, the persecution of the Chassidim from Peshitzcha was intense. Now here it's different from the Yid HaKadosh. The Holy Jew of Peshitzcha generally advised his Chassidim not to fight back. It seems that the Chassidim from Peshitzcha fought back, and the Rebbe Rabbunim generally did not warn them from fighting back, and there was quite a milchama. There was quite a war that began to develop within Poland. It reached a high point when a report was brought to Rabbi Meir Halevi, just to give you an idea about how destructive Lashon Hara is and how absurd it could become, that it was circulating throughout Poland that there were two eyewitnesses, two Hasidim, who saw with their own eyes that the Rebbe Rabbunim was eating coffee and was eating cake and having a drink of coffee after Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur night. And this was something which was going around and had been widely accepted as the truth, since the two eyewitnesses were considered to be trustworthy Hasidim. Now, what actually happened there? Because this is a famous maisa. What actually happened in that situation was that the daughter-in-law of the Rebbe Rabbunim had a baby Erev Yom Kippur. And she was home. And the Rebbe Rabbunim sent sent Chassidim to go tell her. He was in shul. It was Kol Nidre. And he sent Chassidim to instruct his daughter-in-law that she must eat, according to halacha, that she must eat. And she refused. And the messengers came back to the Rebbe and said that she's not eating. The Rebbe Bunim said, tell her I'm commanding her to eat. She must eat. She just had a child right before Yontif. She has to eat. And she sent the Chassidim back that she refuses. And she told them that the only way that she'll believe them and the only way that she'll agree to eat is that her father-in-law himself comes, mamish himself, and brings and serves her coffee and cake. Will bring, if the Rebbe himself will come and bring her to eat, then she'll believe that it's true and she'll agree to eat. Only the Rebbe himself brings the food. And the Rebbe Bunim left by Kol Nidre. He left Shul Yom Kippur night, and he went to his daughter-in-law, and these two Hasidim reported that the Rebbe Bunim was eating cake and drinking coffee, when in fact he was saving a Jewish life by the humility and the greatness of the man. He left Shul Kol Nidre to bring his daughter-in-law something to eat and something to drink, because that's the only way that she was going to do that in Yom Kippur. This was spread throughout Poland, that not only are they careless with the other fast days in Pesach, but the Rebbe Bunim himself was seen eating on Yom Kippur. And this sounds crazy. I mean, none of us would believe that about anybody else, in shul. And yet, to give you an idea about how sin, how hatred can cause such a distortion and could create such ridiculous lashon hara, this is what was happening. Now the one person who could stop all of this, and this was dividing up families, this was mamash al-Muhammad. People who think that only in modern times there was such an Indian, like what happened with Bells and Sadmer, a certain machlokes in the last few years with Lubavitch and so on. So when something happened in Williamsburg years ago with Bells and Sadmer, so I said to my father, I can't believe, how could it be? So my father said, what are you talking about? This is like, this is for children. He remembers, my father said, are you kidding? I remember what was going on with Bells and Munkach at the time back in Europe. This is mamish nothing. There are no casualties, my father said. That's really wonderful. So this was a very serious machlokes. It's hard to believe. These were mostly very, very sincere people who believed in what they were saying, and it's very dangerous. The one who could stop all of this was the Ohev Yisrael. The oldest Rebbe of the generation was Rabbi Avram Yeshua Heschel, the famous author of the Ohev Yisrael, the Apterov, who was the oldest of all the tzaddikim of the generation, and the only living student of the Holy Rebbe, Rabbi Elimelech. However, the Ohev Yisrael said that he was too old to get involved, and he refused to become involved in this machlokas, and he did not agree to condemn the Rebbe Bunim, nor did he express any open support. But here it's interesting. The Rebbe Bunim warned his Hasidim not to start up with the Ohev Yisrael or any of his followers. The Rebbe Bunim was afraid of the Kepeda of the Ohev Yisrael. He was fearful of upsetting the Ohev Yisrael. And later on, ultimately, what would happen is that the Ohev Yisrael would be the one who would step in and defend the Rebbe Bunim and the Chassidus of Pshischa at the wedding that we're going to be talking about, the wedding of Ostila, where the Ohev Yisrael prevented the excommunication of the Rebbe Bunim. If not for the Ohev Yisrael, there would be no Chassidus of Pshischa, and it would have been looked at as some sort of a fringe group from the past that didn't make it. And the Ohev Yisrael actually was the one who was able to prevent that, just like we saw that with Breslov, that if not for the Beditshva, if not for the Kedushas Levi, really more accurately the Rebbetzin of the Kedushas Levi, we'll talk about that with Breslov, but because of the Rebbetzin of the Kedushas Levi, that and the Rebbe himself, Rebbe Levi Yitzhak, that there could have been an excommunication of Breslov, which could have ended, God forbid, that illustrious world of Breslov Chassidus, and it was prevented because of the Rebbe Levi Yitzhak Beditshva and his wife. So here too, the Ohev Yisrael would ultimately defend the Rebbe Bunim at that wedding, which we'll talk about soon. Let's discuss a little bit more about the hisnagdus of this Rabbi Meir Halevi, the author of the Sefer Orla Shemaim, because there's some very interesting stories that we have. And once again, we're going to see the difference between disagreements, disputes between tzaddikim and between chassidim. As far as tzaddikim are concerned, there was great love and there was great respect between the tzaddikim, even though they were opposed to each other. As far as the chassidim are concerned, the machlokas would then unfortunately descend to the lowest places. It would then end up in simple kinna and sinna, hatred and jealousy. But by the tzaddikim, that was not the case, God forbid. One time, Rabbi Meir Halevi used to openly speak against the Rebbe Bunim Pshischa. He would speak against the Rebbe Bunim. One time, the Rebbe Meir Halevi was sitting with the chassidim, and he said the pasuk, it was that parasha, where Moshe Rabbeinu said, Macheni na misifricha. Where Moshe Rabbeinu said, in Kisisa, that if you don't, after the sin of the golden calf, that if you don't save the Jewish people, you can erase me from your book. Macheni na misifricha shekasafti. He told Hashem, then I don't want my name in your book. Erase my name from your book. So Rabbi Meir Halevi said that the word Macheni na, erase me, is connected to the word mochen, which means understanding and intellect, like the moch, the brain. And he said a very sharp word. He said, Chassidim mevakshim moichen. There are chassidim, there are new types of chassidim, that they're looking for moichen, they're looking to reach high levels of depth and of understanding. Avla moichen sarach lova rak mi sifricha asher kasavta. Mocheni no mi sifricha means that if a Jew is seeking mocheni, which means moichen, a deeper understanding, it has to be misifricha asher kasavta, which means it has to be from the books that have already been written, meaning it has to come from the study of Torah. V'loy mi bunim aptaiker, and not from bunim the pharmacist. That's what he said. It's pretty sharp. So mocheni no, he says there are chassidim that are looking for all kinds of brilliant insights. Now the Rebbe Bunim was famous for his brilliant insights. We're going to be learning them soon, some of them, and he was very sharp. So Rav Meir Levi said, there are chassidim who are mecheninah, they're looking for moichin, they're looking for brilliance. And he said, if you're looking for brilliance, that's very nice, but you should look for it where? Misifrucha shekasafta, look for them in the svarim, and studying Torah. But not from Bunim, who was running a drugstore. And he said this publicly in front of 1,000 chassidim. This obviously was not going to be good publicity for the Rebbe Bunim. And immediately, Chassidim set out to Pshischa to report to the Rebbe Bunim about what Rav Meir Halevi said, that comment. And the response of the Rebbe Bunim was very interesting. He couldn't be outwitted. And the Rebbe Bunim answered, even though we'll see that he had great respect for Rav Meir Halevi, despite all the things that Rav Meir said, the answer that the Rebbe Bunim gave to that was a pasuk in Kehelis. It says in Kehelis in the 7th parak, Tov l'shmo garas chacham mi'ish shomeya shir k'silim. Which simply means, it's preferable to hear rebuke from a wise man than from a person who listens to the songs of fools. Again, it's preferable to hear rebuke from a wise man than from a person who listens to the songs of fools. But listen to how Rebbe Bunim explained this pasuk. He says, Tov l'shmo garas chacham. Who is the chacham? Who is the wise man from whom we should listen to rebuke? We should hear rebuke. He says, Tov l'shmo garas chacham. Davke, from what kind of a chacham? From the person who's ish shomeya shir k'silim. From the one who has heard the songs of the fools. So Rebbe Bunim says that I understand the nature of Jews because I was a pharmacist and because I spent time at the theater and in such places, and with Jews who were attending theater, and they were listening to the songs of fools. In other words, what the Rebbe Bunim was saying is that it's true. I'm not denying the fact that before I became Rebbe, I was a pharmacist. And I'm not denying the fact that I had, as a businessman, before I was a pharmacist, I had many connections to Jews who were not religious, and we spoke about many of these stories from before when he went to the theater, even though he never actually saw the show. But he was with these types of Jews, with non-religious Jews. But the Rebbe Bunim says the mistake of Rebbe Meir is that he sees this as something which disqualifies me from being a Rebbe. And the Rebbe Bunim says it's exactly the opposite. Tov l'shmo garas chacham. If you want to hear the rebuke of a wise man, it's davka the rebuke of a wise man who has what? He says, milishmoa me ish shomeya shir k'silim. Davka the wise man who has heard the stupid songs. the one who knows and is familiar with what the man on the street, what the simple Jew is going through. So I don't disagree with your Rebbe's description of the facts. That's true. In my past, I was a pharmacist. I'm not denying that. But the mistake is, that's why I'm more qualified than him to help Jews. Because I understand simple Jews, and I know what they're about. And I have my finger on the pulse of the Jewish people. That's what he's saying. Which is a teaching that the Baal Shem Tov, which we've spoken about before, that the Baal Shem Tov said, the famous Chazal that tells us that you can't be mighty somebody, so for instance, you can't cause another Jew to be exempt from the mitzvah of hearing the shofar or of reading Megillah unless you yourself are obligated, right? You have to be obligated. A child cannot blow shofar for an adult because the child's not himself chayiv. He's not obligated. So how can he blow shofar for an adult? So the word chayiv means obligated, but in the language of Chazal, it also means guilty. Like the word chova. Chayiv means guilty of something. So the Baal Shem Tov taught that if you want to be mitzi somebody, l'idei chovaso, if you want to take a Jew out of his guilt, in other words, if you want to bring him back to Hashem, it's only if you're a chayiv ba'is ha'dover. It's only if you yourself know, if you're guilty, so to speak, of that ish, of that matter, of that problem itself. In other words, if you understand that yourself. That's why when the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech raid, go down from the mountain. Which Chazal say, Lech means raid migdulascha, go off your high place and go down to the people and understand what they're about. So the Rebbe Bunim said, it's true that my background is not typical of the tzaddikim, of the leaders of the Jewish people. But that's exactly why I can help Jews, because I understand them. Yeah.
The other Rebbe is listening to the words of fools, being gullible and hearing the Lashon Hara from that same pasuk.
Uh-huh. In other words, Tov L'Shmo Garas Chochem Me'isho Me'a Shir K'silim, that he's saying that Rabbi Meir Halevi is listening to the songs of fools, he's listening to the Lashon Hara. Yeah. That's a pshat you could say. He didn't, maybe he was hinting to that, but that's not what the Rebbe Bunim himself explained. He explained, as I said, but maybe that's also a hint over there. But we're going to see in a moment that he had tremendous respect. And despite all these things that were said against the Rebbe Bunim by Rabbi Meir Halevi, he tried whatever he could to bring shalom, to bring peace. Let me just share with you a couple of stories. Of some episodes, some instances of what took place between the Rebbe Bunim and the author of the Or L'Shamayim, and what Rebbe Bunim had tried to do in order to stop the machlokas. As I said before, that Rabbi Meir Halevi, the Or L'Shamayim, did not hesitate to speak. I don't know halachically how to explain this, but Rabbi Meir Halevi would speak openly, would say negative things about the Rebbe Bunim openly. I guess he believed that the Rebbe Bunim was dangerous, so he would speak about him publicly. So one time it happened that the Rebbe from Apt, the Rebbe Meir Halevi, that he called over two Hasidim, and he forced them. He told them to take a shvua, to swear that they would carry out what he told them, and they were frightened, and they swore that they would carry out what he told them to do. And he said, "Se'ula p'shischa, I command you to go to Pshischa and to go into the Rebbe Rabunim and tell the Rebbe Rabunim that you are my messengers and that I have this question. And the question that you're going to ask him is, Eichu mazbris atzma shanasa l'Rebbe v'admo shel chasidim. How does he explain the fact that he made himself into a Rebbe of chasidim? Bezman shikyadua hu haya kol chayev soicher. When all of his life he was just a businessman, a merchant, and he used to go to Danzig, he used to go to the fairs, and he was a merchant. And how dare he, Eich Mayhav Oiz Benavsho, how dare he be a leader of Jews and put himself into such a position to be a leader of Jews when there are rumors that are well founded that he himself used to go to the theater. Now, the Hasidim, when they were given this job, these two Hasidim, they were very, very upset about this. And they themselves told what happened, and they began to shake and tremble, and they were crying that the Rebbe should release them, that they were afraid to go to Rebbe Bunim and get, like, why do we have to do this? We don't want to get involved in this. Like, if you have something, you know, like, Why don't you work it out? But we don't want to do this. And he said, you swore and you're going. So they had no choice. And the whole way they were crying and davening. They didn't know what to do. But ultimately they came to Pshischa, and they went to the Shabbos, and they said they have something very urgent to talk to the Rebbe about. And when they came in there, So they stood before the Rebbe Bunim, and the first one began to say, "Anachnu shlichim shel Rabbeinu Rabbi Meir Halevi mi'abd." We are messengers from the Rebbe Meir Halevi. And when he said those words, the two of them began to cry. They were so frightened, they just began to cry, and they couldn't stop crying. And they were so afraid of Rebbe Bunim. So Rebbe Bunim said, "Tagid mashu rabcha tziv alecha. Your Rebbe commanded you to tell me something, and you're obligated to tell me. And you should say, don't be afraid. I'm not going to be upset. You could say what he told you, and you have to carry out what your Rebbe told you to do." So he said, "We're not guilty. We didn't want to come here, but our Rebbe forced us." And the Rebbe Bunim said, "It's okay. I'm not going to be makbid. You're not going to be in any danger. Just tell me what he told you to say." So they said over that they said over exactly what they were told to say. Now, the response of the Rebbe Rabbunim reveals to you the greatness and his humility, because, as I said, when it came to wit and when it came to being outwitted, it was impossible to outsmart the Rebbe Rabbunim. And there are many things that he could have said. What he did say was the following. Tomer l'Rabchem. He said, "Tell your Rebbe, she'emes ito. Tell your Rebbe that he's right, that the truth is with him. But ulam im hayisi b'tzirusi mala al daiti ki epam epoch lios Rebbe umanigeda. Tell your Rebbe that when I was a young man, I never dreamt that I was going to be a Rebbe. If I would have ever thought that I was going to be a leader of Jews, lo hayisi osas mashasis, I never would have gone into business, and I wouldn't have gone to the theater, whatever he heard. I wouldn't have done any of those things. I didn't know that I was going to be called upon to do these, to be a rabbi." This didn't quiet down the machlokas, but even though there was so many lies that were being said about him and such terrible things, the way that he responded was always to try to bring shalom. He tried to make shalom. Now, eventually, Rabbi Meir Halevi stopped saying things. What happened? What was the ma'aseh? The ma'aseh, and you have to understand that he was a great tzaddik, this Rabbi Meir Halevi. I mean, and with the time will come, Hashem will have a separate talk about Rabbi Meir Halevi from Apt. This is a very unfortunate episode in the history of Chassid. It's just like we have by Rabbi Nachman. The Shpol Zaydi's machlokas, Rabbi Nachman is famous and was even more extreme than this. And then what Rabbi Nosson Breslov went through, it's any of you have ever read the book Through Fire and Water, it's simply hard to read. There were one particular tzaddik, what he put Rabbi Nosson Breslov through, it's just hard to believe that it could happen. But there's a difference between, as I said, the Rebbe's and the Hasidim. Yeah, Doug.
Why, if you knew you're sending messengers that were going to be carrying a very difficult issue, why didn't the Rabban write the note down and give it to them as a shluchim and then let the response be written back? That way, if you're sensitive to your shluchim, you would feel...
Yeah, that's part of it. That you're asking a good question. I don't have an answer to that. It seems that Rabbi Meir Halevi was trying to add fuel to the flame of the machlokas. There's no question about it. He wanted the chassidim to know, and I guess he could have obviously sent it in a sealed envelope. He didn't do it that way. He wanted to be. He wanted to make trouble. But I don't mean trouble the way that simple people make trouble. He felt that Pshischa was dangerous, and he was trying to publicize the machlokas.
You could give someone else fear like this, that you're giving them death, you're taking away their life.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you, David. I don't get it. I don't understand. It's hard to understand why he put that. And these chassidim, you have to realize, they were afraid for their lives. You know, you go to the Rebbe Bunim and you get him upset. I'm not just talking about emotionally, being emotionally distraught. They were afraid that if the Rebbe Bunim would be upset, they would drop dead. They believed in that. And the Rebbe Bunim had that power to do that, had the koyches to do it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. So they were afraid for their lives. There's no question about it. You know, there's a famous maaser, Rabbi Kiv Eiger. Everybody knows the Rabbi Kiv Eiger. there was somebody that didn't want to give, that the Rebbe Akiva Eiger told me he has to divorce his wife, and the man refused to give a divorce. And he spoke very chutzpahdik to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger told him that you should know that there it says the beginning of Kiddushin, you know, it says the beginning of the Gemara, you know, that there are that there are two ways that a woman is able to one way that she could remarry is so the other way, you understand, there could be a get, and there's another way that she'll be free to marry. Mm-hmm. So it's up to you. Which way do you prefer? There are two ways that she could be free, either through divorce or through your death, right? And he said something chutzpahdik, and before he left the room, he fell on the floor and he died. It's a famous story. It was seen in front of many people, by many people. He died in the Beis Din. He died. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, I'm giving you a list, I'm giving you a warning. And these were tzaddikim who had such kaiches, and there's no question that these chassidim were terrified. But the Rebbe Bunim told him not to worry, and he said that he's not makbid. But listen, there are stories we're going to hear now, one or two, where there were kapedis. But when did the Orla Shamayim, when did the Rebbe Meir Levi stop saying things? Another such story. Rebbe Meir Levi sent another messenger to Pshischa. He told him to go there and spend Shabbos with Rebbe Bunim, to go spend Shabbos. And he told him, go to Pshischa. Do not go into the Rebbe Abunim to give shalom, to say hello. Just go there, to the Beis Medrash, when the Rebbe Abunim is saying Torah, and I want you to go listen to the Torah that Rebbe Abunim says, and come back after Shabbos and tell me his Torah. I want to hear what he said on Shabbos. So this chassid went to Pshischa. Friday night, the Rebbe Abunim had tish with the chassidim. They were singing, but he didn't say any Torah. Shabbos day, the Rebbe Abunim didn't say any Torah, even though he usually did. He didn't say any Torah. And then finally, when it came to Shalosh Hudos, to the third meal, it was Parshas Mishpatim, and the Rebbe Bunim just said one sentence. This is the Torah that he said. In general, his Torahs are very short, but this was particularly short. The Rebbe Bunim said, it says in the Parsha, V'nosi ba'amcha loy sa'or. That means that you are not allowed to curse, to say destructive, negative things about the leader of the Jewish people. Nosi ba'amcha loy sa'or. So the Rebbe Bunim says, "Anima farish is a pasuk kach." This is how I interpret the pasuk. V'nasi, that means that if you have become a leader of Jews, you've become a rebbe and a nasi, ba'amcha, and Jews look up to you as their leader, then lo sa'or, it doesn't become you. It doesn't become that you should be cursing other Jews and saying bad things about Jews. He turned the whole pasuk around. The simple pshat of the pasuk is nasi ba'amcha lo sa'or, that the people cannot curse the leader. But he said, Nasi, if you became a leader of Jews, Ba'amcha, and Yidden love you and they look up to you, then how could you curse other Jews? Loisar. Now you understand that the messenger came, nobody knew that he was a messenger from Rabbi Meir Levi, he went incognito. So obviously this was the spirit of Ruach HaKodesh, that the divine inspiration that the Rebbe Bunim had. So the Chassid left after Shabbos, and he went back to Rabbi Meir Levi, and he told Rabbi Meir Levi exactly what the Rebbe Bunim said by Shalosh Hudos, and that was from that time and on, Rabbi Meir Levi no longer spoke openly, no longer said negative things about the Rebbe Bunim. That's when he stopped. Now, the Rebbe Bunim himself said, "What's the difference between me and Rabbi Meir Levi?" He said the following. He said, "Hu ish elokim min urav." Because the Chassidim and Pshischa, obviously, they were itching like to go and fight against Rabbi Meir Levi. And Rabbi Bunim said, listen, that tzaddik, Rabbi Meir Levi, is tzaddik ninurav. He said, his problem, it should be a problem that all Jews have, is that he was always a tzaddik from the time that he's a little kid. He was always holy. Therefore, this goes back to what we were saying before, he doesn't know. How could a person, Rabbi Meir Levi doesn't understand, how could a Jew do an aveir? He doesn't understand, how could any Jew sin, that tzaddik? That's why he can't understand really the problems of the people who are coming to him. I was in dancing and I was in theaters, he says. I understand sinners. When I come to my house, it's an interesting sentence, listen. When I come home and I see that there's a tree that's crooked, that's not growing straight, I need bokeh ha'isa. I know how to uproot the tree. U'maktzi'o somikol tzadav, and I know how to to even it out on all sides, the yisyosha kakirin, to make it straight, like a beam. Vazani nice and neshama kadosh, and then I could give it back its soul. I can give it a soul. So he said, this is the difference. He says, Ramea Levi is very holy. He's very holy, and he doesn't even know what it means to do an aveira. I know what it means, and I come from such a past, and I'm therefore, Davka, that, as we said before, that gives me the ability to be able to straighten out those who are crooked. Reb Meir Halevi died on the 25th of Tammuz. And there was somebody who came with great joy. One of the Chassidim of Pshischa came to report this to the Rebbe Bunim, thinking that it would make Rebbe Bunim's day. To tell him that his main opponent, the one who caused him unbelievable tsaros, had passed away. So he came in and he said in a very offhand, like Leitzanis, he says, I have good news, Rabbi. And Rabbi Bunim says, what? There's good news? And Rabbi Bunim was lying down. He was very sick. He was very old. He wasn't well. So Rabbi Bunim says, what's the good news? And he sat up and he said that the Apterov was just Nifter. So when he heard that, listen to what he said. I mean, obviously it's the translation from the Yiddish. He jumped out of bed and he started running back and forth in the room and he was screaming out, Vai, oi, oi. He says, Kana Kavana Eli. The intention here is for me. It was very mysterious words. He says that Reb Meir was the spine. He was my spine. And he says, he was the Omad Hashidrishali. That was, he was the one who upon whom I was depending. So the Rebbe Abunim was saying that despite the great machlokas, the difference between them, he was in some level, whatever that means, depending upon Rabbi Meir Halevi. And the truth of the matter was is that afterwards the Rabbi Bunim was extremely, extremely saddened, and he isolated himself for some time, for quite a while. And it was less than 2 months later that he died. Less than 2 months later than that, the Rabbi Bunim died after that. So we don't understand the connection. Again, the Chassidim have one interpretation, that Tzaddikim have something going on between the two of them. But he said he's Hamish Enishali, he's the one who I was depending upon. And that's why he knew that when Reb Meir Halevi died, that it meant his death was near. And the other part of this story is that chassid who came to tell the good news died the next morning after he brought the news. He died the next morning. That was a kepedah from the Reb Bunim. That Reb Bunim was upset that he came in. It's one thing to come and say, to be upset that a tzaddik died, but he came in and he was making litzanis that the Apterov was nifter. So that chassid of Pshischa died the next day. So we don't understand again, even though there are certainly many questions whenever it comes to the whole subject of machloikis with chassidim and tzaddikim rather, we don't understand. Let me tell you just one or two other stories regarding this matter. Another one of the tzaddikim who was part of the machlokas, not as strongly opposed, but opposed to Rebbe Bunim, to the Chassidus of Pshischa, was Reb Shaila from Shedbros. Reb Shaila, some of you remember that we did last year, the Yid HaKadosh, the Holy Jew from Pshischa. Reb Shaila was the best friend, the Chavrusa of the Yid HaKadosh. He was a great Talmud Chacham and a great Tzaddik who was very widely respected. Didn't have a large following of his own, but was respected by all the Chassidim and even the Misnagdim for his brilliance in Torah. And he was opposed to the Chassidus of Pshischa. He didn't speak against the Rebbe Bunim publicly, but he was opposed to Pshischa. Nevertheless, he was on very good terms with many of the students of Rebbe Bunim. One of the most famous students of the Rebbe Bunim, who we're going to meet Shem talk about more one day, was the Holy Tzaddik Rebbe Yitzchak from Vorka. Rebbe Yitzchak from Vorka, of course, is the beginning of the court of Amshinov, Vorka Amshinov. And Rebbe Yitzchak from Vorka, those of you who have seen the Sefer Beis Yitzchak, of some of his teachings and have heard stories of him, know that he was very gentle-natured, very soft-hearted. He was by many considered to be the reappearance of Rebbe Levi Yitzchak from Baditchev in terms of his love of Jews and his softness and gentleness of character. He was a disciple, of course, of the Rebbe Abunim. He was closest friends with the Kotzker, and both of them studied by the Rebbe Abunim of Pshischa. So it once happened that Reb Yitzchak from Vorka was Rabbi Yitzchak Mivorka was passing through the town of Pshedberz, and he went in to see, to visit Reb Shaila. Now the Rebbe, the old Rebbe Reb Shaila, had tremendous love for Rabbi Yitzchak Mivorka. But he never understood, like, why does he go to Rabbun of Pshischa? This bothered him. So the story was told that he came into Reb Shaila, and Reb Shaila asked him, Eichat ayoch liyos kan etzli? How is it that you come, how could you even come to see me? Doesn't it bother you? How could you come to even speak to me? You know that I'm against your Rebbe. And if you'd be a real chassid, how could you even come to see me? You know that I'm against your Rebbe. So how could you come to talk to me? So the answer of Rabbi Yitzchak from Vorka is very, very beautiful. And it's something that you can use. Because all of us, unfortunately, in this world have to go through machloikis and all kinds of things like this. So he told him the following. He said, if I knew that you were opposed to Rabbi Rabunim, that to my Rabbi, I definitely would not be able to look at your face. I wouldn't be able to come here. Aval ha'emesi, he says, the truth is, the truth is that the reason that you're against my Rabbi, you never met him. The reason that you're against my Rabbi is because of all the Lashon Hara that you've been hearing. The things that people have said about him. Because you've accepted this Lashon Hara as being true. Rabbi Yitzchak of Work is, I, however, know the truth. And I can tell you that my teacher, my master, the Rabbi Rabunim is holy and pure. Whoever says something against him is speaking, is telling lies. And he says, therefore, when you say something against the Rebbe Rabunim, he says, you're not really saying it against the Rebbe Rabunim. Let me explain. He says, it once happened to me, I said this once in shul, he said, it once happened to me that I came to a certain city, and there was a certain woman who lived in this city whose husband had abandoned her and left her for years as an aguna, as a woman that couldn't remarry, just left her alone. And when she saw me, I was visiting in town, when she saw me, she thought that I was her husband. I must have looked like him. Some years had gone by. She began to beat me up. And this woman came and started hitting me and yelling and cursing. And this was in the market. And Anoshim Hisarvu Fridabina, people came and pulled her off of me. She was beating me up, this lady. And he said, I didn't know what was going on. She just started screaming and yelling. I figured something's going on here, but she's beating me up. In the end, Neidl, of course, she asked Satos, and she realized that she made a mistake. It wasn't the right guy. She made a mistake. And she began to cry. Not only was it the wrong guy, but the people were in horror I was Rabbi Yitzchak from Vorka, and she was beating up a Rabbi. You know, it's a problem. Huh? Yeah, it's not a good thing. So she started to cry. She threw herself on the floor started begging me for mechila, that I should forgive her for this. And I told her the following. Hal tivki. Rabbi Yitzchak from Vorka says, don't cry. Don't be upset. Halo be'emes, atir batzta l'baleich. Really, the person who you were beating up was your husband. Ki chashavt osila baleich, because you thought I was your husband. You thought I was your husband. Vim hayis yodas l'chadchidle shani lo baleich, eli Yitzchak from Vorka. If you would have known that I'm not your husband, but I'm just a Jew, Yitzchak from Vorka, lo hayis marim yad, you would never have lifted a hand. What are you? You're not nice. You're a wonderful person. You wouldn't have. You weren't hitting Yitzchak from Vorka. You were hitting your husband. It's just you made a mistake. It happens that I'm not your husband. I'm Yitzchak from Vorka. But you were really trying to beat up your husband. And your husband deserves taka to be beaten up. He deserves a patch. So he says, v'lachein ani moichel lach l'chila shalom. I'm moichel you and you go in peace. I'm not him, I'm not your husband, and he's not me. So it's mamash, if you think about it, it's an amazing thing. It's a very, very deep thing. And you could take chizik from this, when there's machloikas against God, but against any one of us, and people are saying things that are not true, then think of this meisim for being able to work at this, to try to be mamash chus on a Jew. So he says, So Rabbi Yitzchak from Vorka ended and said to Rabbi Shaila, Mashatam Dabim Sorakilo Allah Rabbi Rabunim, all these things that you're saying against my Rabbi Rabunim, Zabakhlalahu. The reason that I can still come and love you and talk to you and be here and learn from you is because you're not speaking about my Rebbe. This is, you're just not. Kilomaduba Babakhlal. The man you're talking about is not my Rebbe. Now he says, Ki chol ashkar mashanoshim adam, all these lies that you've been hearing, all the Lashon Hara says, Zabach lalo negeilav, that's not him at all. Therefore, I'm not running away from you. The things that you're saying, you're a tzaddik, and you're saying the right thing. If my Rebbe had done the things that people are saying, those lies, if he really was guilty of those things, then you'd be right for saying the things that you say. Therefore, I'm fine with you, I have no problems with you. Because what you're saying is true, it's just you got the wrong man. It's not my Rebbe. You're talking about somebody else. Therefore, we can continue to love each other and to be good friends, despite the fact that you've said these things against my Rebbe. This is a beautiful story, and gives you an idea of the kind of tzaddikim that were being raised in the Beis Medrash. They were being raised in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yitzchak of Rabbi Rabunim. Now let's talk about,
The spine, he said he was my spine.
Yeah.
That reminds me, if someone that you respect challenges you,
yeah,
it makes you grow.
Yeah. That's maybe what he meant to say, that it's, that to be challenged, what Blim is saying is very, very true. That a tzaddik who's unchallenged and who's just obeyed out of pure obedience, favor to that tzaddik, is not helping, nor is it helping him grow. The fact that the Rebbe Rabunim had somebody in the world who was challenging him meant that the Rebbe Rabunim appreciated that was his spine, that was adding to his own personal growth, to be on his toes and to perfect his ways. It certainly is good. And that's why in more modern times, some of you might know that there was a very strong difference in philosophy between Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and the Rav of Yerushalayim, the Rav of the old community, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. And the followers of Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, I mean, what they did with Rav Kook, and this is something that's one of the saddest and most disturbing parashas in modern times, to the point that the Chofetz Chaim wouldn't agree to meet with some of those followers of Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld. When they came to meet the Chofetz Chaim in Poland, he refused to talk to them because of the things that they did to Rav Kook. Nevertheless, between Rav Kook and Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld themselves, there was great love. And even though from some of there was a famous 3-volume book, I don't want to mention the name of it, there are a lot of good pictures in it, and there's some interesting things in it. But in general, the books, this particular thing is filled with lies. It was written by one of the Kanoim. It was written by one of the hot-headed guys from Yerushalayim. He should live and be well. I know who he is. He's a little bit of a mishugana. He wrote 3 volumes on the life of Reb Chaim Sonnenfeld. That's filled with all kinds of distortions and lies. So he tried to give the picture as if Reb Chaim Sonnenfeld, you know, God forbid, hated Rav Kook, and he left out very conveniently pieces of the history and so on. But those histories that are true, there are some beautiful pictures of Rav Kook and Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld holding each other's arms and sitting together. There was great love between them, even though there was tremendous difference. There's no question. There's a tremendous difference in the whole approach. That's for sure. So one time, Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld sent his nephew to Rav Kook regarding a certain urgent matter that had to do with tzedakah, something with tzedakah. Rav Kook was learning with a group of people, and when that nephew arrived, so the people that were there, they were very angry. Oh, look who's here, his nephew, right? They were very angry. Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld's nephew is here, he probably needs something. They were right away talking in such lashonis, and Rav Kook was very angry at them and told them to be silent. And he got up and he called the boy over and he hugged him. The boy told over the Maisa, which was not in the 3-volume set, but is actually in one of the biographies that was written by Rav Chaim Sonnenfeld's descendant. And Rav Kook told the people to wait, and he took the nephew into the room, and he said, "You're here from your uncle, Rabbi Chaim," and the boy was very nervous. He said, "Yes." So he said, I want you to know that your uncle and I have great love and respect for each other. And I wouldn't say the things that I say if your uncle wouldn't be violently opposed to what I say. Mm-hmm. So he said, I can only say the things that I say because your uncle is against what I say. So he said, that's why I can say those things. But if he wouldn't be against me, I wouldn't say those things. In other words, you know, there were certain things, there were certain very progressive ideas that Rav Kook had that he had to say in an extreme way because he had to try to get this across. But he also was very happy that Rav Chaim Zonnenfeld was there to keep things sort of in balance, right? And that was the challenge of Rav Chaim Zonnenfeld. So he said that you should know that don't be afraid, that your uncle and I are very close friends. It's good that he's opposed to me. It's very good for me that he's opposed to me. And it helps the cause that he's opposed to me. But like we have in these situations that whereas the tzaddikim themselves had great love and respect for each other, unfortunately that didn't always carry over to the chassidim. And this is one, this story of what happened with Pshischa was one of the most unfortunate in the history of chassidus. But like many machlokas and like many disputes, there was good that came out from it. And the good that came out from this machlokas was that instead of being weakened, instead of the chassidus of Pshischa being destroyed, it was strengthened and to a large extent took over most of Poland. Later on, would materialize in the world of Kotsk and in modern times, amazingly in Ger. And the Baruch Hashem, I'm an eyewitness myself. I was in Yerushalayim last week for a chasna that the Ger Rebbe made. And to see the Malchus of Ger, to see that kingdom of Ger Chassidus in Eretz Yisrael, and the kingdom of Torah, and all of it comes from this person, Rebbe Rabbanu from Pshischa, from that world of Pshischa and Kotsk, is really says a lot about who these people were. So what we'll, I guess we're not going to start now, but what we're going to learn next week, we're going to finish our discussion of the life of the Rebbe Buna by discussing that wedding that took place in Ostila, where there was a conspiracy to try to bring the Ohr of Yisrael, the Abt Rav, to excommunicate Pshischa. Instead, the Ohr of Yisrael would give his approval of Pshischa. We're going to talk about that wedding. It's the most famous wedding, Hasidic wedding of all time. There were 200 rabbis in white garments that were that famous, that the 200 tzaddikim came to that wedding, meaning dressed in white, all dressed in white. In those days when rabbis still wore white shtreimels, white bekishes, white everything, so there were 200 tzaddikim, the leaders of all of Chassidus were at that wedding. And even the Rebbe Buna was invited, but the invitation was only to cause trouble. And we'll talk about that next week. But that's when the machlokas would finally be put to an end, and that's when Pshischa would become part of mainstream Chassidus. Until that wedding, it was not mainstream Chassidus. It was seen as very much on the fringe, on the edge, outside of Chassidus. Then it would become the mainstream Chassidus. We'll talk about the wedding. We'll talk about the histalkus, the ptira, the death of the Rebbe Buna, and then Mitzvah the following week, or maybe at the end next week, we'll begin to learn some of his Torahs, and that will take us over the next 2 or 3 months. We'll learn Torahs from the Rebbe Buna. Shkai.